Tonight, our special guest, Grant Cameron, specializing in stories and documentation of U.S. presidents and their involvement with the UFO phenomena. This is a show I've been looking forward to for a long time. Grant Cameron is next on Coast to Coast AM. Grant Cameron became involved in ufology in 1975 with some personal sightings of an object, which locally became known as Charlie Red Star. The sightings occurred in Carmen, Manitoba. In the past few years, Cameron has turned his research interest to the involvement and actions of the President of the United States in the UFO problem. He has made more than 20 trips to the National Archives and most of the various presidential archives looking for presidential UFO material. Stanton Friedman was just talking about Grant. One highlight of his presidential UFO research was a chance to question Vice President Dick Cheney on his knowledge of the UFO subject. At present, he continues to look for Freedom of Information Act requests and looks into the Clinton Presidential Library. We're going to talk about that and much more right now on Coast to Coast. Grant Cameron. Hey, Grant, how are you?
Not too bad, George. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm looking forward to this and looking forward to a new year with you, too. I hope you get some of the research data you're looking for.
Yeah, we've been fairly successful so far. I think almost 50% of the requests put out by the Clinton Library have been mine, which has got some people bent out of shape, but it's basically the way it works. It's first come, first serve, and there are some conservative groups who want Hillary's files released immediately so that they can get a hold of the stuff before the election takes place. And I've worked at a number of different libraries over the years, and I know that this is a long and involved process that you have to file early. It comes, it's first come, first serve to a great extent. And I know I just about a week ago when this big controversy was going on, where some people were saying that the Clintons were wasting their time releasing this UFO material, I got two requests from the Reagan Library from 2002. And the one, I don't even remember the guy's name. I looked at this request. It had to do with Reagan and Gorbachev talking about the alien invasion when Reagan was in Russia. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the guys that was in the room, and I had requested his files, but I couldn't remember the guy's name. I couldn't remember what the request was. So this is a process that takes years and years and years. And the Clinton Library, for example, has about 80 million pages and 20 million pages of emails. So they have 100 million pages of material, and I believe they have about six archivists going through this material. And they have to take out all the personal stuff. They have to take, you know, check the confidentiality and the classified material. And this takes forever. So,
tell me about this entire history of UFOs and the presidential election campaigns. How did this all come about?
Yeah, it actually goes back fairly far. And I was just sort of looking at it the last couple of days because this election is a bit different. We've really got things going this year, but it actually started in 1976 with Jimmy Carter, and this was a question that was put to Jimmy Carter in a scrum with the National Enquirer. Asked him about he had had a 1969 sighting, and the National Enquirer, of course, questioned Jimmy Carter about his sighting, and Jimmy Carter confirmed that he'd had a sighting, and this was about 6 months before the election, and they put it on the front page of the National Enquirer, and I don't know if it helped him or hurt him, but that was the first incident, and there have been a number of incidents since. For example, 1988. This was, I was in contact with Billy Cox, who's a journalist, UFO, he's very interested in UFOs in Florida. And at that time, George Bush Sr. was running, he was vice president running for the presidency. And I know Billy Cox and I were having discussions, and I had mentioned to him, you're a reporter, you can get to the president. This is the guy we have to talk to. And it happened to come up that Billy Cox was getting a journalism award and happened to be in the same room as Ronald Reagan and George Bush campaigning for the 1988 presidency. And he went in, he had his question already, and I can't remember exactly what the question was, but I think it had to do with Ronald Reagan and to him to confirm whether there was crash flying saucers. because we figured that Reagan would be the guy who would hesitate or would, you know, make some sort of indication that it was true or whatever. And basically what happened was that George Bush was ahead in the polls at the time, and they were playing music right after both of them spoke. They immediately played music, and they walked off the stage, and Billy Cox tried to get to them, tried to get the question to them, and was not able to. So that was 1980. 1996, a guy by the name of Jack Marbury ran for president and had the UFO on his campaign. He was a sort of an independent Republican, and basically he got one vote. So things actually looked and he was running in Massachusetts. The vote was in Utah, so it looked like he didn't even vote for himself. But there was things started to sort of heat up in the 2000 election, and this was when Charles Huffer asked the question of George Bush about whether he would release the UFO information. And it was at that point that George Bush said, yeah, he would. And Dick Cheney was standing right beside him. And then he said, sure, it's the first thing that he, and he talked about Dick Cheney, will do. He was Secretary of Defense. He was a great Secretary of Defense. He'll get right on it. And that led to the situation where lots of ufologists were interested. It looked like these two powerful Republicans would release the UFO information. And basically what happened when they went in, absolutely nothing happened. And that led to my question to Dick Cheney in April. After they came in January, in April of 2001, I got Dick Cheney on this talk show in Washington, D.C., the Diana Rehm Show. And that's where I asked him the briefing question, which is what we've sort of tried to push for the last 8 years, and that is that we really don't care what you think, whether you believe in UFOs, whether you've seen a UFO. That's not really what we want to know. What we want to know is very powerful people, for example, whether it be George Bush Sr. or whether it be Dick Cheney. The question is, and then this is the question I asked Dick Cheney, is, Mr. Cheney, in all your jobs in government, and he was chief of staff for Ford, he was Secretary of Defense for Bush Sr., and, of course, now he's vice president. I said, in all your jobs in government, have you ever been briefed on the subject of UFOs? And if so, when was it, and what were you told? And that's basically the question is, did someone walk in your office and give you a classified briefing?
Right.
Because my search for the last, and I got involved in 1975, has been to find out what is the answer, who would know the answer. And I went from one level to another, and basically got to the point where I started to work on the presidents and said, this is the guy that should know. He's the head of 14, 15, 16 intelligence agencies. All the material should come to him. The president should know what's going on. The same with Dick Cheney, very powerful guy. And when, so
maybe,
when I
maybe more so than the president.
Yes, especially based upon background. If you have a, for example, George Bush Sr. was asked about UFOs when he was running, and this was in 88, and this was Charles Huffer again asking the question, and that's when he made this famous statement, yeah, I know some things, yeah, I know a lot. And this we actually have on tape. Charles Huffer taped it.
Well, what did Cheney say?
Well, Cheney basically said to me, if I had been briefed on that subject, it would probably be classified and I wouldn't be talking about it, which was to me just the basic confirmation that this thing's for real.
It's like our Navy line. We can neither confirm nor deny.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that led me to get the UFO community to basically, when you get into a presidential election, is to ask the briefing question of very powerful people. And if you go to 2004, you'll see the situation where Wesley Clark came out. Wesley Clark was running, and at one point he was the head of he was leading the Democrats. And in New Hampshire, he was asked the question by Jay Buckley, who was one of the space shuttle astronauts. And he asked him, what's your vision for space? And unbeknown to me and everybody else, Wesley Clark actually, before he went into the Army and became a four-star general, actually wanted to be an astronaut. And so he started on this rambling thing, which ended up being taped, talking about how he believed that we could bypass the speed of light, and he had argued with physicists about it and all this sort of stuff. And he's rambling on about very strange that we can go past the speed of light. So basically what I did is I put out an alert to, and I know a lot of people in the UFO community, MUFON state people, and I said I'd gotten an email from a person who I respect very highly, and he basically said one of the birds, and if you know the story about the Avery, these are these very sort of powerful intelligence, military people who've had some touch with the UFO mystery.
Right.
And basically the message to me was one of the birds says that Wesley Clark has been briefed on crashed flying saucers. So I basically said to all the people, here's a four-star general, and I went to all the people that I could and said, Wesley Clark is running around, and especially in the early part of the campaign when he's in Iowa and New Hampshire, they will take lots of questions from the floor. Somebody has to ask Wesley Clark, have you ever been briefed on the subject of UFOs? And if so, when was it and what were you told? And basically, people were coming back to me and saying, well, we don't want to embarrass them. And I thought, well, if you and I in the UFO community are afraid to ask the question about UFOs, how can you expect people in the media or anywhere else to be asking these questions for us? This is up to us. And basically, the question did not come to Wesley Clark until the day before the election. He was campaigning for Kerry. He was in Reno, Nevada, and he was heading actually for Roswell because New Mexico was one of the swing states, and it was 5 or 6 votes or whatever. And so everybody was running to New Mexico to try to get these 5 votes. And he ran into David Rydiak, Dr. David Rydiak, who works a lot on Roswell, friend of mine. And he happened to be in Reno doing research. He saw that Wesley Clark was speaking there, and so he went in and he asked him the briefing question, which I had asked to be asked. And what he said is he asked him, have you ever been briefed on the subject in the military? Have you ever been briefed on the subject of UFOs? And Wesley Clark said, I heard a bit. In fact, I'm going to be in Roswell, New Mexico tonight. And Rydiak was not thrown off. He basically went back to the same question. So you were briefed. And then he said, there are things going on, but we have to work out our own mathematics, which is a very strange thing because it was the same sort of thing that the head of Skunk Works had talked about when he talked about the fact that we had the technology to take E.T. home. This was Ben Rich, and he said this was a guy who was in the room. He was giving a lecture for a bunch of engineers, and he made this same strange statement. He said, we found the mistake in the equation, as if mathematics has an awful lot to do with this UFO thing and how it works and this sort of stuff. So that was 2004, and then basically we come to 2008, and basically everything changed based on one particular item, and that was Shirley MacLaine put in her book the story of Dennis Kucinich seeing a UFO at her house in Washington State.
Right. Yeah, and we had Shirley on the air a month or so ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great story.
And this just absolutely changed everything because basically I think one of the problems that we have in this whole thing is whether it's reporters or whether it's ufologists or whatever, nobody wants to ask the question. There was an example, and I think anybody who's serious about UFOs that wants to support the thing, I think should actually get on Shirley MacLaine's website and say thank you to her for doing this.
Absolutely. But do most of the candidates, though, Grant, take these questions seriously, or do they kind of laugh a little bit, chuckle, and move on?
Well, you don't want to take the question because you can see, for example, Dennis Kucinich took the question. Russert asked him the question in the October debate. And basically, I've tracked all the articles from Kucinich, and there's been a lot of articles written about this whole thing, and there's basically not a single positive thing has been said by Dennis Kucinich regarding the UFO thing since. It's basically he's a marginalized wacko, he's crazy, this sort of thing. So it's the old deal of if you take Howard Dean last time, you don't see any bald fat guys running for president. It's all image. It's basically you look like you're flawless, you know all the answers, you know how to walk around questions, and you don't want to take a question that's going to make you look stupid. The same works with reporters, and I can give you an example of this.
Yeah, but you know, Grant, if they answered these things in a very hard, professional way, like, you know what, I believe we've been visited, we've got some technology that we're checking into, you know, something that was serious enough, I think the response would be listened to, don't you?
Not from what I've seen. It just doesn't seem to doesn't seem to win you any votes. I mean, it's a type of thing. It's all to me. It's all status. And I'll give you an example. When Bill Clinton was in office, you take a look at White House reporters, and this is why I said to Billy Cox, I said, you're the reporter, you're the guy who can get to the president and ask him the question. But all these people who are in the White House press corps, they don't want to ask the question either because they spent their whole life getting there. They've got their little White House press pass, and they're not about to look stupid. They want to ask something about the economic situation in America or something that makes you look like you went to school. It's a status thing. And Deborah Orrin was one of the reporters in, and she talks about this. One of the things that happened when Clinton was in, Webster Hubble came out with his book, talked about Friends in High Places.
Right.
In the book, he talks about the fact that Bill Clinton had given him the job. He said, I'm going to put you over in justice, and what I want you to do is I want you to find the answer to two questions. Are there UFOs, and who killed JFK? So he writes this up in his book, and it comes in front of the White House press corps, and the story is breaking. It's the same thing as the thing with Shirley MacLaine. It's not you asking a stupid question. It's somebody you can quote, Shirley MacLaine says this, therefore can you answer it? And then you still look like you're a smart guy. And this is what happened with Deborah Orrin. She said, Webster Hubble has made this statement in his book that the president wanted him to go check UFOs. And the press secretary walked around the question. So she asked a follow-up question. She said, is what Webster Hubble put in his book correct about what he was told to do? And the press secretary said, I'm not going to comment on things that people write in their books. That was her two questions. That's all she could ask. And she said in an interview years later, she said, I sat there and waited for somebody else to ask a question, and the rest of the press corps rolled over and played dead. And that's the whole thing. You don't want to be the guy that asks the silly question. You want to be you. It's all status. It's all image. And the same as with candidates. You may even have the answer, but I don't think a lot of them have the answers. I don't think they've really thought about it. And once it gets in there and the question gets asked more often, or as I've always said, once gas gets to be $20 a gallon, then this will become an issue that is important. It resonates with people that, you know, maybe this is true. Maybe they do have this technology where we don't need oil, and it becomes an issue. But right now, I say that elections are not about issues. UFOs is an important issue. People having no health insurance is an issue. But people aren't running on issues, they're running on votes. Therefore, what you would do as a politician, you wet your finger, you put it into the wind, and you see which way is the wind blowing. That's what your issues become. It's the housing crisis now. It's the war in Iraq. It's all the things that people will get out of their seat and go to the polls and vote on. If they won't get up and do that, then it may be an important issue, but it's not something that you're going to support.
Well, now, when a candidate runs, once he's elected, we'll talk more about it when we come back after the break, but once he is elected, how many get deceived? How many, you know, have the wool pulled over them that they just don't get the answers?
Okay. I'll do that after the break?
No, you can just answer that now before the break.
Okay.
And then we'll get really into it after the break.
Okay. It's kind of, I'm sort of divided. I've collected both sides as to, and that's the big basic question is, especially with the president, does the president know? There are two different views. The one that seems to have the most information is that the president has absolutely no idea what's going on. But there is some evidence. I have a very close friend who helped me out, who made two phone calls to two presidents. One was Ford, one was Bush Sr., and this had to do with a famous film called the Holloman Air Force Base Landing. And this was a film that Linda Howe has worked on. Linda Howe, yes. And I worked on this a lot. And this is the question that the story was that this was part of the presidential briefing for UFOs. And both these people confirmed that they had seen this film. So there was that evidence. But there's a lot of people who state that they don't know. And one is, in fact, Bill Clinton himself.
All
and
right, let's
after
talk
the break,
about that.
I'll actually read to you what Bill Clinton said. He actually answered the question.
All right, we'll be back. And we're back with Grant Cameron. Grant, of all the presidential candidates and presidents, why does it seem that the Bill Clinton era might have been one of the most important ones here?
Bill Clinton was fascinated with the subject, and he's even recently stated this. to Paul Davids. That's kind of a long story. I have an article on my website called Bill Clinton and Roswell, and this sort of defines that Bill Clinton was extremely interested, so was Hillary, and that's part of the big story that I'm going after at the Clinton Library. Bill was very interested, and he even stated that we're getting to this story about does the president know, and Bill actually made a speech, and it got absolutely no coverage at all except for one newspaper in Asia. This is a speech that Bill made in Hong Kong in September of 2005.
I think you sent us that clip, right?
I think you may have the audio clip. I'm not sure. I give you the clip that he's talking about Independence Day, the movie.
Okay. It was the Peter Jennings interview.
Brokaw's interview where he talks about how interested he was in Independence Day, the movie, and this sort of stuff. This was a speech. We're still trying to get the audio of this. The reporter who did the story said she destroyed the audio after she's finished. I'm sure they've got it because this was the CLFA, I think, was the organization. He made four speeches to this group. It's a Hong Kong business group. And he was paid $700,000 for these four speeches. This is always the Washington Post made a big deal out of this. But let me read to you what he said. He was asked a question at the end. It was a question and answer period at the end of one of these speeches. And he was asked the question, Mr. President, is there anything that goes on between presidents about secrets? For example, where is Jimmy Hoffa's body buried? Do presidents share secrets with the next president? And Clinton launches into this UFO deal. I mean, he wasn't asked about UFOs, and this is what he said, and it's two paragraphs, and I think it's very important because this sort of defines Bill Clinton and his search to try to get the UFO mystery solved. He said, in answer to this question about Jimmy Hoffa's body, well, I don't know if you've heard this, but there actually, when I was president in my second term, there was an anniversary observance of Roswell. Now, this was 1997. This was the 50th anniversary of Roswell. Remember that? People came to Roswell, New Mexico, from all over the world. Mm-hmm. And there was also a site in Nevada where people were convinced that the government had buried a UFO and perhaps a deep underground, an alien deep underground, because we wouldn't allow anybody to go there. And I was talking about Area 51. And I can say now, because it's been released into the public domain, this place in Nevada was really serious, that there was an alien artifact there. So I actually sent someone there to figure it out. I did attempt to find out if there were any secret government documents that revealed things. If they were, they were concealed from me, too. And if they were, well, I wouldn't be the first American president that underlings have lied to or that career bureaucrats have waited out. But there may be some career person sitting around somewhere hiding these dark secrets, even from elected presidents. But if so, they successfully eluded me, and I'm almost embarrassed to tell you I did try to find out. So this is the president of the United States actually addressing the question himself and tending to indicate that he tried to get to the answer and was unable to get it.
Those are great comments, Grant.
Yeah.
Aren't they?
And this is straight out of the president. So this is one of the audios. I have majority of the quotes I have from the presidents that I've mentioned tonight and on my website. We actually have the audios, but this is the one that we're actually missing the audio. And it's a fascinating statement that he's saying he wouldn't be the first president that people have lied to. And it's a sad situation that if the president doesn't know about this, then it makes you wonder why you'd go and vote, because if the president doesn't know, they could be hiding all sorts of stuff from the president. The president isn't running the country.
And well, we've long suspected, Grant, that the president is merely a figurehead for the Illuminati and these people who want a one-world government. And if anything, this entire UFO episode and series of issues proves that.
Yeah. In fact, if you remember back when Hillary was commenting, when Bill was in so much trouble with all the scandals, and she talked about it then, she hasn't mentioned it since, was this the fact that the vast right-wing conspiracy was out to get her husband. And I remember back then I was sort of laughing at it, and now I actually think that she probably actually did mean there was a group, and this is the whole story. I wrote an article about the reasons why the government might not be wanting to tell you what's going on. And in all my studies at the different libraries, I would read oral histories of people, and basically all the people that were in government, like Clinton and Carter, they were just ordinary type people who were trying to sort of do their best, and they were just ordinary people. And I sort of wondered if I had were the president, I mean, I would just like, you know, telling me, okay, next guy, I'm firing you. I want the next guy.
Yeah, you're gone.
And, yeah, and you would exactly. do this. And I wondered, especially with Jimmy Carter, a guy who's, you know, taught Sunday school since he was 18 years old every Sunday, you know, a very sort of straight shooter type guy. How did, if the president does know, how did they convince Jimmy Carter to keep quiet? Because he came out and he said he was going to get the answers if he got into government, and he went into government and did nothing. And the same with Gerald Ford. Gerald Ford made lots of speeches in the mid-1960s about the situation in Michigan and how this had been covered up, and he wanted an investigation. And we have all these audios of him talking, and then he gets in to be president, and nothing happens. So
no.
I sort
of course, he was trying to hold the country together with baling wire at that time.
Yeah. But it still comes down to why, how did they convince the president? So I sort of looked at this scenario, and I came up with 64, 65 different reasons why they may not be wanting to tell you the secret. And one of the main reasons could be that they don't know. The government is covering it up because they don't know. They have no idea what's going on. It is the government behind the government, whoever is running the government. And the president knows no more than you and I. And there was indications of this during the Clinton administration, that Hillary Clinton, we have a number of examples of Hillary Clinton going to outside people to get UFO information. So they tried from the inside. There was people who told me from the inside that Bill Clinton would call in, like he'd call in an admiral, and he'd say, okay, I want the answer to the UFO thing. And then the guy would sort of look at him like, what planet are you from? And basically he couldn't get anything from anybody. And so they started to go and get him trying to get information from people on the outside. And this led to the situation with Lawrence Rockefeller, the Rockefeller Initiative of Lawrence Rockefeller going into the Clinton administration and trying to get Clinton to declassify UFOs. And the Clintons actually went along with this. They started this new U.S. Air Force study, which was greenlighted by Clinton, and was basically, when it came down to it, 1995, in November, the final report, there was a preliminary report in 94. 95, the final report came up in November of 1995 and basically said nothing happened. It was Mogul balloon, no UFOs, no extraterrestrials, all this sort of stuff. And this long report came out, and the president got it. Now, one of the FOIs that I've filed is on the Clinton speech, because as soon as he got it, Bill Clinton went to Belfast, Northern Ireland, and he made a speech. He was lighting the Christmas tree. It was a peach speech. A speech on peace in front of 80,000 people in Belfast, and he comes up with this letter from Orion, and he refers to this letter from Orion. And one of the FOIs I had was, I want the letter from Orion. I want to see this letter that was sent to the president. And the Clinton Library has already said they can't find the letter. They don't know where the letter is. And things tend to indicate they may have just made this thing up. So anyway, he goes to Belfast after he gets the final report from the Air Force, and he says, Ryan, if you're out in the audience, here's the answer to your question. No, as far as I know, a UFO did not crash in Roswell, New Mexico. But if they did find bodies, they didn't tell me about it, and I want to know. And I've worked on lots of presidential speeches. I've researched how these things are done. They go through many, many drafts, as many as 25 different drafts. They go to 25 different agencies. Everybody has to sign off. Nothing gets in a presidential speech that doesn't belong there. Therefore, Bill Clinton put this in for a reason. This is a shot across the bow to the U.S. Air Force. He was very upset about this report. This is my interpretation. And he said, you didn't talk about the bodies in the report. So I want the answer. And so what does the Air Force do? They do a second Roswell study. 1997, they release a second Roswell report, which cost millions of dollars, whatever it cost them. And in the second, they talk about dropping the dummies out of the
Yeah, the dummies.
1953. And that's the answer to the president. It's Mr. President, here's the answer to your challenge in 1995 in Belfast, Northern Ireland. Here's the answer to the bodies. This is to explain the bodies, because Clinton came out in a speech, and that's how they do it.
Hey, Grant, let's listen to this little clip of Bill Clinton and then have you react to it, okay?
No.
Here we go.
Here's a question from the Internet one more. Independence Day, the movie. Could we really fight these guys off or what, Mr. President?
I loved it. And
A lot of people did, apparently.
Mr. Pullman came and showed it. I thought he made a good president, and we watched the movie together, and I told him after it was over he was a good president, and I was glad we won. And it made me wonder if I should take flying lessons. But, yeah, I think we'd fight them off. We'd find a way to win. That's what America does. We'd find a way to win if it happened. The good thing about Independence Day is there's an ultimate lesson for that, for the problems right here on Earth. We whipped that problem by working together with all these countries, and all of a sudden the differences we had with them seemed so small once we realized they were threats that went beyond our borders. And I wish that we could think about that when we deal with terrorism and when we deal with the weapons proliferation, we deal with all these other problems. That's the lesson I wish people would take away from Independence Day.
What did you think of that, Grant?
Yeah, very interesting. It shows that Bill Clinton has a clear understanding of UFO history. This was first done by Ronald Reagan. His alien invasion speeches, he made about five different references to how the world would unite if faced with a threat from another planet, and how we would lose our differences and work together and all this stuff. And so Bill Clinton knows this. In fact, George Bush Sr. used it in his presidency. He talked about it as well. The fact that the alien invasion would unite people. And the strange thing is, last week, Hillary Clinton talked about it again. She made a speech. This was in Council Bluffs, Iowa. She made a speech exactly the same thing, how she talked about Independence Day. She said, you remember the Independence Day movie and how I wish we could all get together and work together like they did in the movie. So they use this, the presidents, they very rarely talk about UFOs, but when they do, it seems to be the same repetition of little things that they talk about. And the Clintons, in fact, a lot of my FOI material is to look at speeches, to look at when the president talks about UFOs, when he doesn't that much, is to find out how does it get in. Because as I said, in presidential speeches, stuff doesn't pop into the speech. It's there for a reason. I'm looking at all the presidential speeches that Bill gave, and I think there's about 26 occasions when Bill or Hillary talked about aliens, talked about UFOs, made little jokes about it, but worked these things into their speeches. And it's a very interesting sort of thing to try to find out how did it get in there. For example, on the Reagan speech, when I was at the Reagan Library, and I found this much by accident, it was actually the archivist who showed it to me. I was trying to get I saw some writing on some of the files, and I said, is this President Reagan's writing? And she said, no, and she was she showed me the file that I was working on. She said, this is actually the Ronald Reagan's handwriting, and what she showed me was the alien invasion remark, how the world would unite, and it was in Ronald Reagan's handwriting. So I actually, at that point, got the file, went back and traced it, and they had actually pulled that alien invasion remark from Ronald Reagan's speech. And Ronald Reagan, on his draft, the president's draft, actually said, I would like my fantasy put back in. And basically said, no, it's going back in the speech. So it's very important to see because very little happens that you see what's going on. This is the one time you get to see behind the president, behind the workings of the White House, what's actually going on is to look at the speeches.
Let me ask you about Richard Nixon. Did you ever stumble across Richard Nixon, Homestead Air Force Base, and Jackie Gleason?
Yeah, we did. We researched that story at great length. As you know, Richard Nixon had a place down there, and it was about 20 miles from where Jackie Gleason stayed. Jackie Gleason, like Shirley MacLaine, was fascinated in UFOs. He had a huge collection of UFO books and paranormal, psychic phenomena, that sort of stuff. And he stated on one occasion back in the 50s or 60s that he talked to a number of presidents about UFOs. Same as Shirley MacLaine has said that she's talked to a number of presidents. And so the story was that Nixon had gone down there, and when I went and checked all the files at the National Archives where Nixon's files are, a lot of the things didn't make sense. For example, every time Nixon would fly to his place in Florida, he would land at Homestead Air Force Base, and he would take a helicopter from Homestead Air Force Base to his compound in Florida, where his Southern White House. And so he would have known Homestead Air Force Base like the back of his hand. And Jackie Gleason was very close. Now, I remember when we first got the story, it was Jackie Gleason's second wife who told the story.
Right.
And we went back later, and a researcher, his name escapes me right now, went back and re-interviewed her. This is only about 3 years ago, and said this story appeared. She wrote it in the National Enquirer. And went back, and she confirmed the story. Yes, Jackie had come. She said it was either he was running around with another woman, and this is a story he made up, but he looked pretty
pretty glim. He was never the same, was he?
Yeah. And the story was that Nixon had taken him, had met at Homestead Air Force Base, and Nixon picked him up at his house with a car and had taken him in there and had shown him some bodies at the back of a hangar way out in the back of the Air Force Base. Now, I remember when the first story broke, then people said, oh, it's totally impossible. The president can't get you can't get the president clear. He has to have bodyguards. He never would have had the car by himself. And then when I was back at the National Archives, I just happened to run into a story that Nixon was famous for getting he hated, like Hillary Clinton's the same thing. They hated their Secret Service people. It was sort of like they're on them all the time. Hillary told her people to stay so many feet away from her because, you know, they're always in her way or whatever. And Nixon, there was a story told about how his cook had got him at one time. He had hidden in the back of the car and they put a blanket over him, and the cook had driven the car out of the White House, and then Nixon would go and end up in some restaurant or bar. I can't remember where he went, but he hated being around the Secret Service. So there was actually some evidence in the Nixon files to say that, yes, Nixon might have gotten a car on his own and gone with Jackie Gleason to see these bodies. But Gleason's wife, and she's still alive, but we tracked her down, David Ritchie.
That was Beverly, right? Beverly Gleason?
Beverly Gleason, and she maintained absolutely without – she was actually interviewed twice in this period of time, and she in both times said, yes, as far as she's concerned, the story is true.
What a story, Grant.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. And that's one of the keys is if you get these very famous sort of people who get into it, you can sort of use that. That's what happened with Shirley MacLaine, is that Tim Russert, instead of him looking like the dummy to ask the question, he uses Shirley MacLaine. He said, well, Shirley MacLaine said this. What do you think? And he gets to ask the question. And then the thing started to – suddenly all the candidates are getting asked the question of do you believe in UFOs, and except for Hillary. And that's the one we're waiting for. But the reason that Hillary hasn't, I think, gotten asked the question yet is that you still need some way that a reporter can ask the question without it coming up to him being the guy that asked the question. So-and-so said that you were involved in the White House, because Hillary does have a background of being involved in UFOs.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about Hillary when we come back. Grant, how about your website? What is that?
PresidentialUFO.com.
Very elaborate. You continue to look for information under the Freedom of Information Act. Do you think that act was well worth it? Are we getting documents we really need?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the way the history is revealed. In all the presidents, a lot of this stuff is very interesting. And, I mean, a lot of times I actually get sidetracked in there just reading stuff that's got nothing to do with UFOs. It's a fascinating place to spend a week just going through reading about you know, letters that the president writes on different subjects and oral histories. They have a lot of stuff in there where anybody who's worked with the president, they do an interview with them, what was it like to work with the president, tell me a story about the president. It's a fascinating place to be.
Overall, Grant, why not tell the presidents about UFOs? We'll find out next on Coast to Coast AM. Grant, so is it your belief that those working in government, rank and file, do not tell the presidents about UFOs?
I don't think they know either. I think it's if it is held, it's held by military. You have these very highly compartmentalized black budget programs where it may be hidden. I think the vast majority of people, especially politicians, elected people, basically don't know very much of anything. They come into office, and that may be one of the reasons you don't tell these people, is that if you're the president, you're going to be there maximum 8 years, and then you're gone. So this is a long-term program where you have guys like some of the people who have been rumored to be part of this thing are like Dick Cheney, Carlucci, the National Security Advisor for Ronald Reagan, George Bush Sr. It's a long-term program, people that you can trust, people who are going to be around and continue this thing rather than the elected people who come and go. And but it's still very, very uncertain as to who knows. I'm sure the elected people don't know, but the president himself, it's always been a dilemma. I know every time I lecture on it and I say that there's a lot of evidence to indicate the president doesn't know, there's always someone who comes up after, is very furious that this could not possibly be true. And again, there are some indications that the president may just be in a situation where he does know, he's the one guy who knows, but isn't talking about it. For example, you don't really see presidents telling elaborate secrets. They very rarely come out and talk about what happened in their administration. You know, like that guy that got assassinated in Europe. Well, that was us. You know, they don't talk about that kind of stuff. Anything that's secret, a president will be kept will keep quiet about. One of the stories, if you follow Stephen Greer, who spent a lot of time trying to get inside the Clinton White House, had a close friend of Bill Clinton's who I still don't know who it is, but was dealing with him.
Was it John Podesta?
No, it wasn't John Podesta. It was a guy. This is the guy that came out when Stephen Greer was sending in these briefing documents to people like Lindsay, who was Clinton's lawyer. This is the guy who's actually in charge of final release on all the stuff coming out of the Clinton Library. The vice president, science advisor, got one of these briefings. So Stephen Greer is sending this stuff in, and this one guy is bringing this stuff. And I really don't know who the guy is. But this is a guy who came to Stephen Greer and said, the president can't do, like he basically said, I want the president to release all this stuff. And he said, the president can't do what you want him to do. He's afraid he'll end up like JFK. And this is the whole thing that Stephen Greer said, that this was Clinton's friend that said this, that they were afraid that the president would get assassinated if he tried to push the UFO issue and push it out. And it may have been something Clinton said, because Clinton was fascinated in a lot of stuff. He was fascinated in UFOs. He was also fascinated in JFK, because as a young student, he had actually got to meet President Kennedy, shook hands, got this famous picture of him shaking hands. At that point, decided that he wanted to be the president, and which I guess led to his impression. For example, when he sent Hubble, the JFK assassination was clearly solved. It was, you know, a lone gunman with a magic bullet, and yet Clinton didn't believe it, because he went for another investigation. And that's one of the things that I have requested from the Clinton Library, is the JFK files that Bill Clinton has requested. And I think I'm just quickly checking, I think there's 2,500 pages of files on the JFK assassination. Yeah, no, 3,500 pages of files. Like, Clinton asked for another investigation.
And the files are hundreds of pages each, right?
No, this is 3,500 pages total.
Oh, pages total.
But that's
okay.
That's still quite a bit for something that was already supposedly all solved. Bill asked for another investigation. So we don't know what's in there, but it sort of shows that Bill had a belief that, conspiracies do happen. He didn't believe the official line on UFOs, and he didn't believe the official line on JFK. But let me just, on this thing about the need to know, I've gone across a lot of people. What I try to do is I try to find people who have talked to the president and what the presidents have told these people. And some of them are, like, for example, Shirley MacLaine said that she had talked to Jimmy Carter, and Jimmy Carter told him he didn't have a need to know. She also said that she had talked to Reagan's people. I don't know what that means, but she had talked to Reagan's people, and they had told her the same thing, that Reagan didn't have a need to know. Steven Spielberg, we have an audio of Steven Spielberg talking about it, and he said he had talked to a number of presidents, and he said the presidents have told him that they haven't been clued into any hard evidence that we have been visited. So, that, of course, that was one of the things I asked for out of the Clinton Library, because Bill Clinton and Hillary were very close friends with Steven Spielberg and his wife. And I've got 18 pages waiting to be reviewed, correspondence between Hillary Clinton and Steven Spielberg, and 474 pages of correspondence between Steven Spielberg and President Clinton.
Do you believe that other governments, that their people are doing the same thing, withholding information from their either elected officials or appointed?
Well, that's one of the things that seems to indicate that there may be nothing that the government has, because the U.S. may be able to control their people, their military, the black budget, this sort of stuff. But how can you control governments that, for example, the Canadian government? I did, when I first started, I had a UFO sighting, and then after I spent about a year and a half researching this flap of sightings when I started, I went to investigate the Canadian government and what they had done. And in the early days, they knew what was going on, and they had been in contact with the Americans, and it all ended in Canada in 1954. They shut down the program, and after that, I can seriously state I have not, and I mean, I've lived in Canada my whole life, I have not got a single indication from any leak, from any source, that the Canadian government knows anything. So how can you, it would seem to indicate that there's not as much material out there floating around and being covered up. It seems to make more sense that there's a lot of ignorance inside the government as to what's going on, that there is a phenomenon going on, and it's very evident, but the government is struggling the same as you and I, and you can see things like the Clintons trying to get information from researchers. And the Canadian, I mean, you have all sorts of little governments where they flip every day, where life means nothing. And surely if they had that kind of material in starting out African country, as they had got some important piece of information, somebody would have sold it, because they sold everything else in their country. And so that's what leads me to indicate you can maybe cover up the United States, but how can all these governments be covering it up?
Well, that's absolutely right. How can they? But they seem to be able to do a remarkable job hiding the information.
Yeah, exactly. And you have the Americans may have more of the material. Like, there's been a number of stories. There's a couple of stories of Americans recovering material in Bolivia. There's a number of cases like that where the Americans are able to sort of move in, grab material, hardware, that kind of stuff,
and pop out.
Yeah. And pop out, and then that's the whole thing. If you've got the pictures, and you've got the hardware, it really doesn't matter what people say. There's all sorts of stories going around. You don't have to really confirm it or deny it. As long as you have the hardware and the photographs, and people don't have the absolute hard evidence, you're sort of in the clear. But it's a strange thing. My main concern now is to try to figure out what do the presidents know, and do they know stuff? I know Danny Sheehan, you had him on Coast to Coast a couple weeks ago, and Danny Sheehan, for your viewers, was a civil rights attorney, very famous, worked on a number of top cases, was chief counsel to the Jesuits in Washington, D.C. in 1976 when Jimmy Carter came in, and was brought in as a consultant on two studies that were done for Jimmy Carter. So here you have a situation where, on one hand, Jimmy Carter is stating to Shirley MacLaine that he really didn't have a need to know, and on the other hand, you have situations where Danny Sheehan is saying these two reports were done for the president, and the one said that there was between 2 and 6 extraterrestrial races visiting the Earth. And Danny Sheehan talked about seeing these in the Library of Congress, seeing photographs of a crashed flying saucer. And Danny Sheehan tells the story of Jimmy Carter asking George Bush Sr., when he was president-elect, because the CIA director from the former administration always briefs the new president as to intelligence matters. So it was George Bush's job as CIA director under Gerald Ford to brief Jimmy Carter, and Jimmy Carter was already on record that he wanted the UFO files, and supposedly asked George Bush for the files, and George Bush said, "You don't have a need to know. Being president is not sufficient need."
That's okay, but when Bush became the president, then he had that need to know, didn't he?
Well, that's the story that's always been told, that the president doesn't have a need to know, that this stuff is highly compartmentalized. It's got to do with weapons. And there is some truth to this. If you look at presidential schedules, you'll see that the president gets up at 6 o'clock in the morning, works till midnight, has like meeting after meeting after meeting. And the way it works is sort of like presidents are giving briefings on different subjects.
But isn't it incredible, Grant, how they can tell a standing president elected by the people in this democracy of ours, in this republic, you don't have a need to know. We're not going to tell you.
Exactly. And yet there are indications that Carter, there is a number of stories that Carter did. There was a story of that he's seen this Holloman Air Force Base film. And, for example, Shirley MacLaine, there's all these varying stories that you try to sort of piece together. For example, Shirley MacLaine, there was a story, this goes back to the David Letterman show in 1995. Nicolas Cage comes on, and this is one of the audios or videos I still haven't got. Nicolas Cage supposedly was on the show, and he said that Shirley MacLaine had said that Jimmy Carter had told her that he'd seen the bodies and the craft in a hangar. So Shirley MacLaine comes on the Letterman show, and this we've got the actual video of, and David Letterman asks her, somebody phones in and says, is this story true? And here we have, on one hand, Carter not knowing anything, but Shirley MacLaine in 1995 said, what Carter told her is the following. He didn't tell me that about the crash bodies and the saucer, but he told me many times that when I first wrote out on a limb that he would support me, that it was true, that there were crafts, that he believed there were occupants. Why should we be the only people in the universe? He wanted to shine the sunshine laws on intelligence to expose it, UFOs, to see how people would react. But he didn't and wouldn't and couldn't, as he explained to me. So you have this sort of it always goes one way or the other. It's like one time it looks like the president knows, another time it looks like the president doesn't know. To me, it's a very serious situation if the president doesn't know, because basically he's the head of the intelligence, he's the head of the executive branch, and he's supposed to be running the country.
And representing us.
Exactly. It's the government of the people, by the people, and if basically you have a rogue group of whoever running the show with UFOs and who knows what else, it's sort of pointless to be talking about a democracy, because there is no democracy. It's basically run by other people.
In your opinion, the fact that they're not telling the president, that's one thing. Why do you think they do not want us to know?
Oh, there's lots of reasons, lots of reasons. Government works by they're very paranoid. They procrastinate like you and I procrastinate. There's the situation, you hear Stephen Greer talk about it, the threat or the fear of the market melting down. I know when I was studying the Canadian government, the guy who ran the whole program was Wilbur Smith. He had a bunch of inside people who worked with him, and one was a metallurgist, a defense scientist, and I remember having a private interview with this guy, and he said to me, I'll tell you this, Grant. He straight to my face, he said, if you ever find out that they're going to release the UFO secret, sell everything you got, because tomorrow morning it's going to be worth nothing. And this is a fear, whether it's true or not. Like Danny Sheehan says, no, a lot of stuff is fear, and it never turns out to be true, which is probably true. But there is this fear that that everything's going to melt down, that suddenly oil is worth nothing and everything else starts to melt down. You have a 9/11 situation where you have to close the stock market, and because they can't control it, once you open the stock market again, you haven't solved anything. Like on the 9/11 thing, you put a bunch of people on planes with guns, and everybody says, oh yeah, okay, now it's probably going to be safe again. You've solved the problem. But if you can't solve it, and that is one of the things that may be going on, if the president, for example, does know, that they go to the president and say, we only know 20%. Let's hang on, Mr. President. We're working on this as hard as we can. The more we know, the better off we're going to be when we release this thing. So please hang on, and we're going to work on it. And then there's the other scenario, is you don't want to be the president who releases it, because if it does melt down, and then you're going to go down in history as the guy who finally melted it down. For example, there's a rumored story that Henry Kissinger was one of the inside people who knew what was going on, and Henry Kissinger said, this is the biggest hot potato of all time. Like, really, nobody wants to deal with it.
Well, then they must be doing something to us, Grant, if it's that hot. It's more than just visitations, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, sure. And plus, it's what they don't know. I think it's more what they don't know that scares them than what they do know. Because if you take a look at the UFO, and I've always said this, and I talked to Linda about this a number of times. I said, Linda, don't you realize there's a pattern going on here? That as you go through ufology, it goes through contactees, landings, then it goes through the alien, the grays appear in 1960. There's sort of a pattern that the longer ufology goes on, it gets more and more complex, and the abductions, and then the abductions options get more complex. Then you have these hybrids, and the more you look at it, the more we realize it's like anything else. The more you study it, the more you realize what you don't know. And that may be the whole thing, is that I spent 35 years at this, and I know very little, and I'm sure they've got a lot of holes that they're trying to fill. And so it's sort of like buy time. Same as, I mean, you're going to run out of oil eventually, so why don't we solve the oil crisis right now? Well, it's not a crisis right now. When it's a crisis, they will do it. When gas is $20 a gallon and people start, protesting on the street. I've said that ufology to me is like it's no different than any other issue in the world. It's like whether it's gay rights or women's right to vote or the environmental concerns, the end of the war in Vietnam, whatever it is, it was people who marched on the mall in Washington, D.C., who were able to get 10,000 people together to put pressure on the government. The government does nothing unless they're under pressure. Otherwise, they sweep everything under the carpet, and they just keep going, and, it'll be okay. We've got a little bit of oil. Let's just keep the thing going. And the environmental, the greenhouse problem, it's sort of like put it off. When it becomes a crisis, then mankind steps up and solves the problem. And when the time is right for ufology, it will be right. And I really don't know. I used to say, well, I don't think in my lifetime I'll see disclosure. But after this Shirley MacLaine thing, where suddenly it becomes almost the main issue, the Washington Post is talking to me, Associated Press is talking to me, the Fox News is talking to me, and Washington Post talked to me for about an hour and a half. It's sort of like this thing could break. I mean, it's a simple little thing of one person like Shirley MacLaine putting something in a book that gets the whole thing going, and the next big issue might be Hillary getting asked the question, because Hillary has a very serious interest in ufology, but she had a...
Will she answer it, or will she think
I'm sure she's got the answer already. I'm sure she's going to do what they're all basically doing, and it doesn't matter whether it's... Richardson, who wrote a foreword to a book on the Roswell crash, or whether it's Kucinich, who knew, according to Billy Cox, knew that this UFO thing was going to be in Shirley MacLaine's book and had talked with Danny Danish.
Sure.
And talks about how they discussed UFOs, that he was very much into the subject and this sort of stuff. The way they're handling the thing now is to say, there are UFOs, but I don't believe there's extraterrestrials coming here. There's an issue of disclosure. There's an issue of the government covering up stuff, but I don't believe. They're all answering the question the same way. I don't believe the aliens can get here. Even Jimmy Carter said that. Yes, I had a UFO sighting, but I do not believe those were extraterrestrials. I don't think extraterrestrials can come here across time and space. And that's the way they're all handling it. Richardson's handled it that way. Kucinich has handled it that way. Kucinich's wife has handled it that way. They're all doing the same thing. And that's how I think Hillary has got the answer. She'll say, yes, I was involved. Yes, I had a role in the White House.
Well, I guess we will find out, Grant. Hey, Grant, stay with us. I want to talk about Tales of Charlie Red Star when we come back. Grant, tell us a little bit, if you would, about this incredible tale of Charlie Red Star.
Basically, I was a student at the university and used to spend our time driving around. I live in a city of about 700,000 people, just about 60 miles north of the U.S.-Canada border, north of North Dakota. And this occurred in the spring of 1975, just as the Vietnam War was ending. And 30 years later, I went back and reinvestigated, and it appears the Vietnam War may have had something to do with it. But anyway... There was a series of sightings. This is about 35 miles southwest of where I live, small town called Carmen. There was a flap of UFO sightings. It was being seen almost every night. This thing was flying around. It was being reported in the newspapers, on TV. Then I said to my friends, I said, well, we're driving around the city here doing nothing. Why don't we go out and see what's going on in Carmen? And we sort of put it off, and then some more reports came out, more newspaper reports. It was still being seen. And then the local TV station went out and got a film. They actually filmed this thing jumping off the ground. And at that point, I said to my friends, come on, let's go see what's there. We went out, and we drove around for an hour, didn't see anything. We were driving back into the town the last time. My friend said, well, if you don't see anything, we're going home. And if we had not seen anything on that trip back in, the one-mile trip back into town, I never would have gotten into this subject. I had no interest in UFOs, had never thought about it. And as we were coming back in town, this thing which appeared to be sort of alive. It was red. It was pulsing. It was bobbing up and down like a bobber on a fishing line. It was moving up and down. It wasn't flying in a straight line. Flew right in front of the car. And I was absolutely floored. It sort of changed my whole life. And I went out two nights later. I got all my friends. I said, you got to see this. This is the most amazing thing you've ever seen in your life. I remember all my friends came out, and there was people from all the city. Everybody was out there trying to see this thing. And we were sitting with a group of about 25 people. And by the time the thing finally came, my friend said, oh, Cameron, you're crazy. We're going back to the city. We're hungry. We're going for pizza. They took off. Most of the people took off. There was seven people left, and the second night was spectacular. This thing was bouncing around the sky. It flew right at us, came within about maybe half a mile. It was glowing, had a green glow on the back. Again, it was bobbing, moving very, very slow, maybe 40, 50 miles an hour. I can still remember the other car that was there took off after this thing, and that led to me just basically shutting down and spending a year and a half researching the sightings, talking to people, and trying to gather all this stuff because I was so fascinated that people should know this. To me, it was an immediately an important story that everybody should know about. And I went, I got manuscripts, and I sent it to major publishers in Canada, and they were sort of interested, but nobody really bid at it. So I went to the local publisher who would have known about the story. It was a big story here, and I still remember the local publisher in Winnipeg saying to me, wrote a letter, the rejection letter, which said, you may believe in this kind of stuff, count me among the unbelievers. And that sort of led me on to going after the Canadian government and trying to get elevate my level all the time to find out who has this mystery or who has the answer to the mystery. But 30 years later, I was mentioning this thing was Vietnam. It was very strange because 1975 it started, and the flap sort of went till the fall, and then the next year there was sort of a series of sightings that occurred about 11 miles away from that town. And I remember going back, I was lecturing on this at Ozark in, I think, 2004, I went back to interview people, said I was going to lecture on this, and going back to reacquaint myself. And I talked to people, for example, the guy who owned the airport, who had 150 sightings in this one-year period. And I said, Bob, I said, have you had any sightings since? He said, no, not a single sighting since. It was like they'd taken the drugs out of the water. It was like it was there. It was every night, and then suddenly it stopped.
It's gone, yeah.
So then I said to him, and this was a question that had sort of bothered me for 30 years. I said, Bob, why would they hear? Why Carmen? Because it's nothing. It's a town of 2,000 people.
Yeah, and kind of give us a terrain view,
yeah,
would you?
There's the closest town is 11 miles away, and it has about maybe 300 people. It's farmland. It's flat. There's nothing. There's these mile roads. There's absolutely nothing. There's nothing of any importance. There's basically wheat farmland and no some small hills on the one side, but basically nothing.
So you don't think there's any hidden resources out there?
No, that's why I said. I said to Bob, like, why would they hear, Bob? You were here. And he said, well, you know why they were here. And I said, no, Bob, I don't know why they were here. And he said, the missile silos. And as soon as he said that, it just rang a bell. Because the Carmen is about, it's closer than Winnipeg. It's maybe 25 miles from the border. And as kids driving around North Dakota, you know, with your parents or whatever, we'd all seen the missile silos and the Minuteman III missile silos. And there's piles of them. The Minot base is all missiles. And the Grand Forks Air Force Base, if you see the map, and I showed this at Ozark in 2004, there's just hundreds of these missile silos. And so he said, you know, that's where they were coming from. We used to sit up in the hills, and they would come from the south. And his impression was that the U.S. was chasing the things, and they were around the missile silos. And there was even a story of them having one cornered over a missile silo, and they were told to ram it. And the one guy pulled out of the formation at the last minute, and this guy was in a bar at just across the border from Carmen, was telling this story that he had pulled out of the formation and the UFO got away. But they would sit above the missile silos. And so this is where the Vietnam War thing came in. And it did make some sense that the Vietnam War ended exactly the same time this was happening. Saigon fell in April of 1975. My sighting, I think, was November or May the 11th. It was a couple of weeks later. And that it started in March and went very heavy during that period. And one of the things that was released at that time, Bob Pratt from the National Enquirer was working on files, and they got the NORAD files released in 1975. And this is linked in because we're right on the Canadian border. And the I don't know if you're familiar with the NORAD files, but these were files that talked about unidentified helicopters that had been, and all these documents were NORAD documents, at all the Air Force bases along the Canadian-U.S. border, Malmstrom, Minot Air Force Base, Loring Air Force Base, Wordsworth Air Force Base. Now, these are all Air Force bases that have nuclear weapons.
Right.
And these documents didn't refer to UFOs. They always referred to unidentified helicopters. But the helicopters were not just at the Air Force Base. They were inside the weapons storage areas where the nuclear weapons were. So this sort of led me to the whole thing of the idea that the Vietnam War, that they may have, because of the losing Saigon, that the unknown to you and I, that the military had escalated the status of the missiles. Now, you and I wouldn't know it, but the aliens would pick up on this. And therefore, you had all these sightings along the Canadian-U.S. border inside the weapon storage areas. And the other one that sort of gives some credence to this is the Rendlesham Forest incident. Now, when we study the Rendlesham Forest, again, here was underground nuclear weapons that the Americans were claiming they didn't have there. They said they weren't storing nuclear weapons on British territory, and there was a bunch of protesters outside and this sort of thing. And part of the story from Rendlesham Forest was that this object shot a beam down through the concrete to the weapons below the underground where they were.
Were they trying to disable them, Grant?
Well, trying to disable them, but like you've heard the one about the Malmstrom where they changed the launch codes or they shut down 10 missiles. And
right.
The same thing. The Rendlesham Forest incident occurred in 1980, exactly the same time when Solidarity had taken over Poland, and Poland was about to fall and be taken over by the democratic forces. The Russians marshaled their troops and were ready to go back into Poland and retake Poland. That's exactly the same month as the Rendlesham Forest case. So here's a situation where, because the Americans know that this situation is existing with the communists, that there may be a world war, that the Russians are ready to reinvade a country and the Americans are going to have to take a stand, they may have put the missiles at Rendlesham Forest on alert, and the aliens picked it up, and that's why the sighting there. The same is the explanation. As soon as Bob said to me, the missiles, you know darn well it was the missiles. And I said, yeah, you're right, because that's where they were coming from, and it was very close, and it would make sense that they may have put the missiles on alert, the same as they had the missiles on alert at Loring and at Malmstrom and at Minot and all these different places, and the UFOs had picked it up on and were in there either disabling the missiles or just watching what was going on. And it sort of, after 30 years of not knowing, it was kind of interesting that we played a part in a sort of a much bigger story, because the National Enquirer was covering the story, and there was piles of sightings going on here. They were going to call it UFO Capital of the World. The National Enquirer was here, and I took Bob Pratt for about 2 weeks. We drove around, and I was taking him to all the different people who had sightings, and he was showing me the reports that they were also tracking this in Wisconsin and Minnesota. They had piles and piles of sightings there on this sort of track running a straight line, that there was sightings all over the place. So it was a fascinating thing, and I really didn't solve anything. At one point, one small object was on the ground. I got 50 feet away. So I'm sort of in a situation where people can say they believe or they disbelieve in UFOs. I know. I know what I saw. I was that close.
Yeah.
So there's never been any doubt in my mind. To me, it's a matter of who knows the actual answer to this, and how do we get the answer? And I've struggled. I've gone, like, first I did the sighting stuff in Carmen, then I went to the Canadian government, and we came across this document that Stanton Friedman helped release. This is this top secret memo that the Canadians released, talking about conversations with the Americans through the Canadian embassy in Washington D.C., where the Canadians learned that flying saucers exist. It's the most highly classified secret in the United States, rated 2 points higher than the hydrogen bomb, and a small group headed by Vannevar Bush is trying to figure out what's going on. So I went to there, and that led me to Dr. Eric Walker, who was tied into the Canadian story. And Dr. Eric Walker, that's when we wrote the book on UFOs, MJ-12, and the government, Dr. Walker was the head of an Ivy League college, Penn State University, the engineering college. He had a doctorate degree in engineering, had 14, 15 honorary doctorate degrees. He had taken over the presidency of Penn State University from Milton Eisenhower, who was the president's brother, Ike's brother,
yep.
And was a very, very powerful guy, knew Truman, he was one of the people who knew what was going on. He had been invited to a series of briefings, did not deny this to us at all, had been invited to a series of briefings, which may have been the Roswell crash. We figure it was about 1950. They had a series of briefings, brought in some top scientists and engineers to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base to be briefed on what they had discovered. And Walker basically said, a researcher from California confronted him, said, "Were you there?" He said, "Yeah, I was there. So what?" And basically for 8 years, all over the world, I headed a team of investigators who tried to get Walker to talk, and Walker couldn't hang up the phone, but he would talk around it. And basically, he basically said, "This is a subject you shouldn't be studying. There's nothing you can do about it. Leave it alone. Study something else." And when he finally died, I started going after his files, and I went to Penn State. I looked through tens of thousands of pages of his files, and then I went after his files that he was negotiating, his military files, which he was negotiating to send to the Truman Library. And that's when the whole thing started at the Presidential Library, where I went to the Truman Library and sat down, and they told me they didn't have anything. And I went, "Don't have anything." And then I went down the road 80 miles to the Eisenhower Library, and they told me they had 5 documents from 28 million pages of files. And at that point, I said, "Something's wrong here," and started on a mission to find out where the presidential files are on UFOs, and spent years traveling from one library to another trying to find the material that would give me an answer.
Did you come across anything about the 52 flap over Washington, D.C.?
There was a lot of stuff in the Truman letters. With the one letter we tried to get, was there was a rumored it was either a telex or Einstein to stop the shoot down. I think the 19th and the 26th of July were the two flaps. The one, and after the first one, the Air Force had given out a shoot down order. And a bunch of these letters came in, and you can see them at the Truman Library, where people are asking to, not shoot these things down. And one of them supposedly came from Albert Einstein, but we were never able to actually confirm that. But that story's always run around that Einstein was one of the people that went. In fact, it was the reporter, a famous guy. He had a big talk show like yours back in the 50s, Edwards.
Frank Edwards.
He's the one that told the story that Einstein had gone to Truman and said, "I don't know where they're from, but I'm sure they know how to take care of themselves once they get here. So don't try to shoot them down."
That's remarkable information, Grant.
And that's a story that we've like David Rudiak and I and piles of people, we're pretty sure the story is true. And that's part of the challenge, is to go into the library. You get these rumors, stories, something happened with like for example, the one with Gleason and Nixon. And to go in and to go through all the different files and to try to track these rumored stories down, or the one about Eisenhower talking with the aliens or seeing the dead bodies at Edwards Air Force Base, this whole deal where he disappears. And I tracked that whole story and went through all the files, and he was at Palm Springs and did disappear. And one of the reporters was actually about to put on the wire that the president had a heart attack and died, and the press secretary had to actually stop the story because Eisenhower had disappeared, and they didn't. The reporters had somehow picked up on this.
Yes.
And so the rumored story was that he had gone to Edwards. The big Clinton one that I'm working on that I've filed, it has to do with the Phoenix Lights. If you take a look at the Phoenix Lights story.
1997 issue.
1997, exactly the same time, there was a story came out in one newspaper and said that this was exactly the same time, the same hour, the same day as Bill Clinton busted his knee up. He was at the golfer's house in Florida, and the rumored story was that they were tracking this thing on radar or whatever, and they had given Clinton the alert that they were tracking this huge object, and Clinton had raced out of the house and had tripped on the stairs going out of I can't remember the golfer's name, but he was visiting with a golfer. And so that was came out in one newspaper, and that's a rumored story. So now, of course, with the Clintons, I've asked for the presidential schedule exactly on that date, who was there, all this type of stuff, and trying to track that story. Did Bill Clinton wrecking his knee have anything to do with the Phoenix Lights? Was there an alert where Clinton was notified that they were tracking and he was trying to go and watch the tracking of this object?
So Greg Norman was the program.
Greg Norman, that's the one, yeah. So there's all these weird stories that come up from time to time, or the one I had one, and I may even make a suggestion to try to get regression. I was lecturing at Ozark, and a woman came up to me after I was giving a lecture on the Clintons and their involvement and Hillary's involvement in the files that show that Hillary helped edit a UFO document for the president, stuff like this. So I was going through this, and a woman came up. She was an older lady. She was in her 60s, whatever. And she said to me, I just wanted to let you know either the Clintons or somebody very close to the Clintons had a UFO sighting. And she named the place. It was a place that Bill had hung out, and I knew this. And she said, I'm the sister of the person who owns the place. And I said, can you please, because, you know, after a lecture, you have all these people around you. Everybody wants to ask questions. I said, I gave her my card. I said, can you please make sure you tell me the story and relate what you know, because she was going to go back to her sister and confirm, did Bill and Hillary Clinton have a sighting? And this is in about 1978, which would have explained their interest in UFOs. And she said, yes, I'll do it. She never did. And to this day, I want to sort of get regressed so I can go back and see that woman's name tag, see who that woman was, because we would have known who she was. I asked the guy who ran the conference, and he would have known all the people there as to who she was. But it was a very legitimate story. So these are the kind of things that you get.
Did she run the conference?
No, she was just at the conference. But Lou Farish, who runs the conference, would have known her. She and would have had her registration, and then I would have been able to track her down and go back and get the story. But her story was very definite, and she was very matter of fact that the Clintons, this is where they got their interest, was they were in this particular place and this incident happened. So that kind of stuff is fascinating to try to track down, or the stories about Hillary trying to get material from people, or this kind of stuff. It's just lots of stuff to track. Steven Spielberg, his conversations with the president, what did they talk about? Carl Sagan had a lot of pages correspondence with President Clinton. There can be a lot of stuff. I have 30,000
pages. Great material, Grant. Hey, Grant, stay with us. Final hour to go with you, and it's time now for us to open up the phone lines. So that's next. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Grant Cameron, and we'll take your phone calls as well. Grant, how many researchers like you are out there doing what you're doing?
Presidential work?
Yeah.
Just Stanton Friedman and myself. Stanton did some work. I think that's it.
My gosh, not a lot, but I'm glad you two were out there.
Yeah. No, I don't think there's people doing FYA material, but just two of us, I think.
Is Larry still out there doing
that? Oh, yeah. Larry.
Larry Bryant.
Bryant, yeah. He's he did some Carter stuff. He's off on, going after George Bush. Spends most of his time doing that now.
Okay. Let's go to the phones. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast, you're on with us. Hello there.
George, fascinating show tonight.
It is. He's a great guest. Go ahead.
Yes, this is John in Atlanta. Good morning, Grant.
Good morning.
I wonder what you might could say about the former governor of Arizona finally coming out publicly and admitting witnessing this craft. And also my second question is about the story of, I think, one of Coast's most fascinating guests, David Adair, and his story and his claims. Have you ever investigated that? And I'll get off and listen.
Okay.
The governor of Arizona, it's very strange that he would come out years later and suddenly reverse his story. That, I guess, is the dilemma, is that these guys, it's a status deal. It's if you look at it and say, do I want to be associated with a subject that might, do me in. It puts a question on his story, though. The whole thing. Once you change your story, then it becomes very questionable. But there's more and more on this Phoenix Light thing. More and more people, and more evidence, and it's becoming an amazing story. The David Adair thing. I've watched this story numerous times. My interest in the story, it's hard to confirm a lot of it, was to follow people like, I think he was with LeMay, General LeMay. And LeMay was involved.
And apparently he saw things at Area 51.
Yeah, but it was LeMay that had given him the clearance.
Curtis LeMay.
Had been fascinated with him as a kid or whatever. And LeMay was interested. He was involved in the Roswell thing. That was the only thing I was really following. I was trying to track. But again, I haven't seen LeMay's files. That's basically what you have to do is you got to go and track the files and see whether the dates agree and whether there's correspondence between these people. Those kind of stories are very, very hard to track and confirm. But it is a fascinating story. I've heard it numerous times.
Apparently, when he was 11 years old, he was at Area 51.
Yeah.
And then he's got a little older. He witnessed some kind of gigantic engine that had like an exoskeleton-shaped number 8 on it.
Yeah.
It's just weird stuff.
And the thing was alive. It was alive, which is a theory that other people have, or something that other people have proposed, that these things are actually the craft is part of the person, the unit. It's not. It's more of a living thing than an actual metal craft type thing.
What do you think of the Japanese government official saying that these might be real? We'll investigate.
Yeah, here again, this is another one of these things where you sort of wonder how much the governments actually know. If you get the Japanese, who are pretty technically advanced, I mean, the government coming out and saying, making sort of, almost like statements that you'd make in the 1940s. Oh, yeah, this is interesting, as if they're just starting out. You would figure that they should have all sorts of material, and if these guys are the government, they would not be saying, bring us your UFO files, and we're very interested in this and the ramifications of aliens visiting and stuff. It's very strange that they seem not to know what's going on either, that they're very interested in it, but just basically are like you and I trying to figure out this UFO thing.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello. How you doing?
Yeah, we're great. Thanks.
It's great that I actually got on the show. You guys are a pretty good show, and it's really hard to get on. But you guys are fantastic.
You made it tonight. Go ahead.
I know. I've tried a couple times. I've started listening to you guys for a couple of weeks, and now I'm hooked. But, well, anyway, besides the point, I have a question and maybe a little theory. But UFO mechanics. And when I was younger, I had an experience, a kind of personal experience, that I didn't understand what it meant until about 4 or 5 years ago. And I recalled that experience that I had, and I kind of had an epiphany. And since then, I decided to go to college for physics. Now I'm in school studying physics. But I kind of have an interesting theory on maybe how possible UFOs might fly, if it's an interesting thing that might work. Well, it doesn't hurt to think sometimes.
Nope, not at all.
Sorry, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, what was the experience? Was it a...
Well, actually, when I was 2 years old, my brother and I, how kids might be, we actually lit the house on fire, and I actually died twice. I had no pulse, no respiration.
Jeez.
And that the part I remembered a couple years ago is that I had a memory that I couldn't possibly have had because I was dead. I was in the, we were in a closet. We locked ourselves in a closet, and we set the house on fire. We were scared, so we stayed in the closet. But the first memory I had was when, my mom was trying to get into the room. She was telling my sister to get a cold rag, the doorknob and stuff. But if I was in the closet, unconscious and dead, how can I have memories? I just had some weird memories that I shouldn't have been having.
Okay, this is what I was saying about ufology, that the more you look at ufology, the more complex this thing becomes. I remember sitting, this was at the MUFON conference in Denver, in one of these meetings with abductee people. And this guy, I can't remember, his name escapes me, but a very famous abductee from the Denver area, had videos, had taken all these videos and stuff, and had numerous very traumatic experiences. He was sitting right beside me, he was talking, and he was almost in tears at times, very traumatic. And this is a guy that's got these mathematical equations. Guy has really no education, whatever, to back up this kind of stuff. Has these mathematical equations that they've shown to people like, I think, Hal Putoff and people like this. And these equations actually do mean stuff. It's so where is this stuff coming from? And that's the whole deal, that there are people running around who are sort of being dropped little things into their mind. And that's why I'm thinking, we asked what kind of experience, because it is an abduction type experience. That this is, I think, is, I'm not an expert, but I've heard lots of these types of stories where people have these ideas and this stuff, they don't know where it comes from, and they suddenly have stuff that they can do that they never could do before.
Okay, back to the phones. Let's go to our wild card line. You're up with us. Hello there. Good morning.
Thank you very much. You guys are having a fascinating show.
Thank you.
Before, I was more of an unsophisticated observer of the UFO phenomena. I saw something that knocked my socks off with a witness on Donner Pass about 10 years ago at about 3 or 4 in the morning that was nothing like anything that I would imagine in my imagination at the time a UFO to look like. It was basically, for the listeners to know, it's only about 100 feet away. 100 feet overhead, it flew right over us, and it looked very, very much like a submarine, but floating. And it was coming from the direction of Lake Tahoe. And the thing I noticed that I would have never imagined was I thought it was wet. And this was like before I even heard about underwater USOs, I guess they call them. And we had the peace of mind to try to look inside these recessed windows. Now, these recessed windows were about 6 to 8 feet recessed, and there was a lot of them. And these were very strong-looking glass windows. Some of them were lit, some of them weren't. Tried my hardest to look in those windows to see if I could see anything, but the thing went right over us. It didn't hardly make a sound. I don't know what was generating the energy for this thing, but it was about as long as a football field. It just put us into the state of shock. We drove down to Truckee, which is a town near Tahoe, coming over the pass, and we were just, like, speechless. We were talking in, like, shock. I mean, it was like, what? And because of the way the conversation went, I knew we exactly both saw the same thing. We didn't tip each other off with conversation or anything. It was just like, oh, my God, we were shaking for, like, and you know what? There's U.S. radars right up there on that mountain, right there where we saw it. They're right there. And this thing was flying about 10 feet really close to the treetops of the pine trees that are there that are probably about 100, 150 feet tall. And it was like nothing like I would imagine. So I've been listening for the last 10 years. But I was just wondering, is there a place to call to see if there was any more sightings that came in?
Oh, yes.
That night?
If you go on the our website or just do a search for the National UFO Reporting Center, Peter Davenport might be able to track that for you.
Because I bet you there's people out there, you know, besides this call.
Absolutely.
That are probably wondering that. And also the thing on the political people, I've because of the UFO influence from 10 years ago, I kind of am in the process of doing a book on the political world from kind of like a coast-to-coast point of view where
sure.
You don't just, you know, report that, you know, Clinton said this and Obama said that. You kind of report, well, isn't it funny that she did this on a full moon and they're coming off of this and they're doing this and we're reporting things that are discovered. Like,
you may be my next guest.
Like when's the Venus getting hit by lightning and the Mars thing with the asteroid. When's that going to happen? And, you know, we're doing a very accurate political book, though, at the same time. Very, very astute, but not uptight.
Okay, great. I'd love to read it when it's done, and you too may end up being a guest. Grant, where do you go from here? I mean, you continue to get these documents, hoping that you get these documents. I mean, what's going to happen?
I think we're getting closer. I mean, this election is completely different than all the rest. I mean, it is the major issue. For example, one of the things, as I've said before, the conservative people are very upset about these UFO documents coming out. It was a major story. Like I'm telling you, the Washington Post was talking at great length with me. They had the documents, the Hillary documents that I had that showed her involvement and stuff like that. There are more documents coming. I have 30,000 pages of UFO documents under review at the Clinton Library. And just UFO, straight UFO stuff is like 2,500 pages. This is a huge release of files. I'm still in front. The reason that I'm ahead of them is I filed first, that I had 1,000 pages of Clinton documents from the Office of Science, the President's Science Advisor from when he was in office. These were not subject to FOIA. I was able to get 1,000 pages. So I had all the names of all the people who were involved in the Clinton administration in this kind of stuff. And I was starting to file this free information. I had all the questions. I started doing this like 10 years ago. So I filed very early. I've got lots more files coming. I think you may be in a situation where, as I told one conservative newspaper that had written up a book, what a total waste of time this was to file this UFO stuff. Let's get to the real stuff, the Hillary Clinton diaries and stuff like this. I said, I'm not going to, why should I stand aside and let you determine your self-interest when you didn't get off the couch to go and file? Get ready for a long wait. Because I've got 100 Freedom Information Act requests, and I'm still first in line. you may be seeing a lot more articles coming out. If for example, if they release the 1,500 or 2,000 pages of UFO documents, people are going to, every time it comes out, all the reporters take a look and say, what's with all this UFO stuff coming out of the Clinton Library?
Exactly.
And I've got a lot. And
there you
are. You're going to see some more stories, I think.
What's your home or office look like with all these documents all over the place?
Well, right now I just have from this latest release, I've got some photographs and I've got a few documents. I've got my kid just shakes his head when he looks at my room. I said, well, this is very organized. I've got a couple of computers and books and documents and stuff. But a lot of it now is done on computer and it's all sort of digitalized and to enable to move this material, which is one of the things that just fascinates me. When we first started this thing, it was sort of like you were mailing stuff. Now it's like if something breaks, if I get like for when I got the photographs of Hillary Clinton with Lawrence Rockefeller at the ranch, and this is where Lawrence Rockefeller sat down with President Clinton and Hillary and briefed them, or not briefed them, but he talked to them about UFOs. And this was in August of 1995 when the Clintons went there for holidays.
Well,
I got the photographs of Hillary to confirm the story that Hillary was there, and here she is with Lawrence Rockefeller walking along a path, and she's got this book that everybody's trying to figure out what book was she holding now. But anyway, this kind of stuff, I can get these photographs, and within minutes, they're all around the world. And so the technology is moving very fast. We've got people all over the world working on this stuff. And I think we have, as I said, government has to be pressured. And I think we now have some people who, Stephen Bassett's doing a fantastic job
in terms of
pushing this issue and trying to force it. And I think it's just a matter of time. I thought the Washington Post had the documents. I thought they were going to go with the documents. And they ran the story on me about the Clinton stuff without the documents. But you may get another couple of releases from the Clintons on UFOs. And once somebody runs these documents, there's three key documents that show that Hillary had a role in the Clinton White House, that she edited a UFO disclosure document for the president on behalf of Lawrence Rockefeller, and all the material that was Lawrence Rockefeller was trying to get the Clintons to declassify, all the material that the president's science advisor and all the material Lawrence Rockefeller were gathering was going through Hillary Clinton's office. So this is a major type of thing that I think if you get the Washington Post, Associated Press has the documents, Fox News has the documents, any of these people run those documents, and it could be a real long run of stories.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're up with us. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hi. My name is Merlin. I'm phoning from Chicago.
Hello, Merlin.
And excited to be on the show.
Thanks.
I'm wondering, has there been any kind of research from going back to our founding fathers Say like George Washington, you have Ben Franklin, signers of the Constitution. And Ben Franklin, of course, was a scientist. And I believe prior to the, I think it was before the Revolutionary War, he made trips to England, going back and forth and so on. So I'm wondering, and also they must have dealt with Indians, you know, around the various communities where these folks lived. So I'm wondering if there's any kind of research, letters, research being done, maybe to research letters written, books, manuscripts, anything at all, that where the UFO subject is brought up. You know, they saw.
What do you think? Strange. What do you think of that, Grant? We've got a minute before the break. Go ahead.
Okay, I tracked two stories. One was George Washington, and a story he had a vision. And I think it was interpreted as an angel or something.
Angelic, yeah. That was an angelic vision, I think.
Yeah, well, but you get a lot of these things where it's sort of like the Ezekiel's vision in the Bible where then suddenly it gets interpreted as a UFO. So that was right. The one I looked at, wasn't able to confirm anything. The other was Lincoln. Lincoln was very sort of into this kind of stuff. And there was a story which I was never able to confirm that Lincoln had met with aliens, but I think it was Strange's put this story out, and I was never able to. I went through a lot of Lincoln material and was never able to confirm that story.
Wouldn't that be incredible if Abraham Lincoln met with aliens? Oh, come on.
Yeah, well, it all seemed to start in with Roosevelt. Roosevelt, there was a lot of stories. It just seemed to start right there and just increased, and especially when the atomic bomb went off, then everything started, and the stories really took off.
Grant, when we come back, we'll finish with final calls. But I want to ask you when we come back, if you believe that we have been visited. I know you're researching this. I know you're getting documents. But what do you believe? I'll be back in a moment. Final phone calls. This is George Norrie, and you're listening to Coast AM. Mr. Cameron, so what do you believe? Have we been visited?
Yes, we have. As I said, the way I started was basically having an experience. And you have people who believe, people who disbelieve, and then the people who have had experiences know. My father's a pilot. My son's a pilot. I have never seen anything like this. I had a whole pile of sightings. I was 50 feet away at one point. At one point, I had this thing sitting right on top of the car, maybe about 100 feet up, huge object. My experience has led me to two beliefs. Skeptics are almost always wrong, people who naysay this thing. And if it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, has sex with other ducks, it's probably a duck. I've had experiences where people talk about out-of-body experiences. I've tried that. I have my doubts about anything that I haven't experienced. And I've tried lots of the esoteric, trying to duplicate these things, have not been able to. UFOs, I had a lot of experiences. I had no doubt from the very start that this was extraterrestrial. If it wasn't, it was something very, very spectacular that is not of this world. I've never seen anything like it since. I had lots of sightings, and I've never had any doubt. To me, it's always been a game of finding out what is the real answer, that this is extraterrestrial, but who has the answer? And I've spent all my time. I couldn't care less about sightings anymore. I mean, people have said, well, see stuff. I really don't care. I've seen, I know what I saw. And to me, it's just a matter of getting the answer now.
And indeed you will. And we'll be right with you when you get them. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. Your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
That would be me. That
yes, I think you would be a very good selection.
I'm outside of Fallon, Nevada, real close to Fallon NAS, Naval Air Station, and each evening I see very, very many lights, and I've got a lava dome over here. I'm in the middle of the old Lahontan Lake, which was 10,000 years ago drained. I've got all kinds of stuff around here, but lights and UFOs over close to where I'm at, where I live. I live on a ranch. It's out in the middle of nowhere, and I have no internet access, et cetera. I want to sell my lava dome over here. I have visitations probably two or three times a week. things drop in there. And I am kind of wondering if it would be a governmental type thing or it would be extraterrestrial. And as a footnote, I used to shoot competition with some gentlemen that used to work at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And I was born in Ohio, and I migrated out here. A friend of mine, an older gentleman that was a general, I asked him about Hangar 13 and a few things about the UFO things. And at the time, I was probably 17 or 18 years old. And at that point in time, he did not answer me. The next time we went to a competition, he walked by me, looked at me over his shoulder, and said, "You're absolutely right, Mark." And nothing else was said.
With a true conviction, too, I bet.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. My friend, I'll tell you what. This guy, there was no way that he would lie to me, would have lied to me at all.
What a great story. You know, Grant, no way to determine truly if it's a extraterrestrial craft or a government craft, is there?
No, that's one of the other things. One big question is, does the president know or does the president not know? The other one is, have we got the technology? There's some indications that we don't, and then there's Ben Rich standing up and saying we now have the technology to take E.T. home, and it would take an act of God to get it out because it's so far in the black. Stephen Greer is big on stating that we now have the technology, that we've had it for quite a few years. I haven't really studied that. I haven't seen it from the presidential angle, but that is one of the stories, is that that's the big secret, is the technology behind it, that they really don't care about the alien part. They're just, it's a matter of we get it, or the Iraqis get it, or the Russians get it, or the Chinese get it, and you protect what you've got, and these deep black programs have made progress. So there's a lot of people out there who believe that the government does have the technology and they've back-engineered this stuff and they're flying it around. It's hard to, unless we find a document or something, it's hard to prove it one way or the other. But Stephen Greer, I've had respect for. He's got, you know, a lot of people and a lot of stuff. And then Ben Rich coming out with this statement stating that, you know, they have the technology to take E.T. home. Mm-hmm. It's possible that the government has the technology.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Yeah, hi. I've met with remote viewers that are closely associated with the Avery in the past, and they've come to the conclusion that aliens are shapeshifters and time benders, and that they're replacing the president. So the reason why why all the secrecy is because aliens are hostile and they're using deception, so you won't be able to get much out of asking the president questions. And finally, SRI reverse engineered zero point energy back in 1971 from a textbook that they were able to have an out of body experience fly to another planet and bring back a smoking gun textbook, which is what caused Jacques Vallée and other members of the Avery the Owl help put off to get into ufologies, because they had the evidence all along, which SRI has reverse engineered. And why it's not in the public domain and hasn't caused global transformation yet was because of 9/11, which Washington was very well aware of and was briefed on, and zero point energy would have prevented the contrived war for oil. So I was wondering what you make of the shapeshifter time bender
theory. Okay.
Theory.
Go ahead, Grant.
I know a number of the Avery. I've never heard them talk about this kind of stuff. They're very conservative type people, the people who are, you know, part of this group. These kind of theories run around. It's hard to confirm this kind of stuff. My experience with them is they're very, very conservative, very cautious about what they say. I've never heard this kind of stuff.
Never, ever. Wild card line, you're up with us. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, good.
Gotcha. George. Go ahead. George. You've been on so long. You've been on hold so long. We got you.
That yeah, is. I was falling asleep here. George, you're a great patriot, and I love your program. I'm Phil from Michigan on Streamlink.
Hey, Phil.
And I want to remind you fellas about what happened in Michigan in 1966 in the spring.
With J. Allen Hynek.
And every night we would wait for Jack LaGoff to come on the news to give the UFO report.
Yep.
And one night we were waiting and we saw out of our back windows like a little red light bouncing all over the sky. As this vehicle was coming into our dimension, totally out of control, broke down, came down right behind our house, and they were broke down for a half an hour. My dad, as an engineer, and I, as a little kid, we went back there to try to help these guys. We thought they were Air Force. But then looking at this thing, not making any noise, and having all the cars following it, there was a caravan of cars, hundreds of witnesses, we realized that this is not U.S. Air Force. And didn't make a sound. And I want to just remind everybody of all the great things that happened back then with the UFO topic. And reviewing it years later, and I talked to Jacques Vallée, and I was the one that told him on WWJ on a radio program way back in the 70s about interdimensional. They were totally out of control. If a human being was in that craft, he would have been squashed by the G-force, because we're talking from almost horizon to horizon, 10 miles, 5 miles on every movement. The best thing I could describe it was a mosquito chaser waving in the darkness of night. And they were broke down. And I just don't think they can ever disclose any of this thing, and they can't disclose it, because it would go contrary to everything that the government is involved in as far as secrecy and even with our religious beliefs. It's too ugly.
Well, that's possible. And, Phil, back in the early 70s on that radio station, I was the producer of that program.
Yeah.
Small world?
I saw you on TV, and I even knew your friend, Joe Pellegrino.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I had dinner with him a couple of times, and that was one of the topics. And it's a small world. But, George, I love your program. I'm thankful that I hooked up on your stream link, by the way, because during the day I can catch up.
Yep, we podcast you.
Oh, man, it's beautiful. And Grant, I appreciate the work you're doing, and keep up the work. I mean, the information's there. Keep pushing. But I just think that the guys in power and all the presidents probably knew about this. Certainly Eisenhower did. Absolutely Eisenhower did.
Yeah.
And Nixon, obviously, he was a control freak. He was suspicious of everything. Who's going to say no to Richard Nixon? Who's going to say no to Reagan? And who's going to say no to an insider like George W. Bush Sr.? Okay, yeah. These guys know. They do know about what happened. Reagan mentioned it many, many, many times in his speeches, and I remember this very, very vividly. It was like, to me, it's like a no-brainer. I was a witness. I saw it up close. It was real. It was actual hardware. There's no question in my mind. The press didn't even cover it, and they had witnesses everywhere. By the way, after it left the field behind us, it went right over to the tank arsenal on Van Dyke and Martin Road, and it turned on big lights, and it was photographing, or was doing something above that. We all saw that. The policemen seen it.
Jeez.
Everybody saw it. Van Dyke Road, you got hundreds of cars going down Van Dyke every 10 minutes. Everybody saw this. Caught a lot of heck from opening my mouth when I went back to school. But when our football coach said he saw it, and when our basketball coach said he saw it, then everybody knew this was just something we can accept. This is the real thing. And I just hope someday, George, you have a close encounter.
I want one. I want a real close one.
I'm telling you, you will be amazed, and it will. I mean, it's the universe is a wonderful thing. I mean, it's God's creation. There's yeah. more than just, you know, us on this world. And if you really look at it's in the Bible. It's you talk about Ezekiel 1. You've got, they even mentioned that highly polished bronze vehicles, if you take the original text. UFOs go back to so far back, who knows? Anyway, I said enough.
Okay. Thank you, Phil. Let's get a little reaction from you, Grant. He's right on, Grant.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be interesting, though, if he reported this. It sounds like one of these stories that would almost make a book. Fascinating. My big question to him is he refers to they, which is one of the big things I work on all the time. Who are they?
Who are they?
Who
exactly.
is covering this thing up? And who I don't think it's quite that certain yet.
And who do you think the men in black might be?
Interesting. I had a guy in Winnipeg who told me the story about Men in Black. John Schussler told me his story of Men in Black. Very, very. That's what I'm saying. When you get into ufology, you get into the more and more you get, the weirder it gets, the more complex it gets. I have no idea. But no doubt these people have seen what they say they've seen, and it's gone on almost as long as ufology. It's just another layer to, like an onion, another layer of this complexity of this mystery, which may be part of what the government doesn't really want to release, is they really don't know what Men in Black are. Or I always said, like, if you're the president of the United States, you say you're George Bush and you're going to disclose, you're going to stand up and say, okay, UFOs are extraterrestrial, that's all we're going to say, it's classified. Within, you know, a day, there's going to be 2,000 trucks on the White House lawn with antennas and stuff, and somebody's going to ask the president, Mr. President, you're constitutionally responsible for the protection of the American people. It's been estimated that 2 million people have been abducted. What are you doing, Mr. Bush, to protect the American people? Yeah, I don't think he has an answer. I don't think he has any concept. The government has any control. If aliens are abducting people, they have no control over this whatsoever. And those kind of questions are what you really don't want to be facing, is to answer all the stuff that you don't know, because it makes you look stupid.
Well, and as David Jacobs believes, this is happening, and it's not for a good purpose.
Yeah, exactly. You get that kind of stuff, and unless you're in a situation where you can answer the question, it's better off not to bring up the subject and look like you know everything that's going on. Because the president is in a position where he always has to look like he has the answer to everything.
All right, let's go.
The president doesn't.
Let's go east of the Rockies. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. You're speaking to me. Oh, wonderful. I actually, my experiences last about 30 days. They date back to the time of the, you remember that lunar eclipse that we had?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And then you couldn't see the moon.
This was the one in October, wasn't it?
I think it was around September 1st.
September. Okay.
Okay. And then what happened was, on the morning of the lunar eclipse, I saw what I thought was a meteor on the opposite side to the lunar eclipse. And I know we're running out of time here, so I'm going to have to make it short.
Yeah, I've got just about a minute or so for you. Go ahead.
Okay. On September 4th, I retrieved 2 bona fide study signals at the University of Western Ontario, proof positive that extraterrestrial intelligence exists.
What were the signals like?
Well, I'm not so sure I want to share that with you because I believe they contain valuable genetics information.
Well, don't give me the specifics, but I mean, how did the signal come in and what form?
Oh, I first discovered the signals telepathically. I was asked, what happened was I...
All right, but it didn't come through your computer then?
It did. It was on the computer. I confirmed them online. The actual
okay, so you do have... Did you pass this on to SETI?
Not yet, but there's more. Like, I saw an actual spacecraft about 100 yards above me, an actual nuts-and-bolt metallic spacecraft with 4 lights. It was a 4-wing spacecraft. 3 of the wings had a crimson-red light. The one that the front
did you,
one
did
had,
you see an occupant?
No, but it was silent. It was about 100 yards above me, and a scout ship exited the craft, and it was doing surveillance around the area. And there were footsteps in the woods, and I was afraid that there might have been a serial killer, so I was lying down on my back, and I didn't want to.
All right. I don't blame you. Hey, we got the clock. Grant, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Grant Cameron. For Dan Galante, who's put in some extra yeoman work for us today. Steve Carr Wayne Roberts, Tom Danheiser, Gina Salvati, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.